Hey everybody, and welcome back to No More Tech, the show where I answer your technology questions and also try to break down some complex topics. I'm Devinder Hardwar. I write about tech and gadget.com, and I podcast about movies and TV at slashfilm.com. Be sure to check all that out. And this week, it is all about VR. Oculus had two major headset releases, the Oculus Quest, which is their standalone wireless thing that we've been waiting for a very long time, and the Oculus Rift S, which is a weird kind of mid-step upgrade of the Oculus Rift. Before I dive into that, though, I just want to remind you, if you want me to answer any of your questions, just fill out the form at nomoretech.net/ask, and that's no with a K, or shoot me an email at nomoretechpodcast@gmail.com. I know it's been a while since the last episode. I just can't really figure out a schedule for this thing, given my workflow these days and the baby, but hopefully once things settle down, we'll try to go bi-weekly. So over at Engadget this week, I reviewed those two Oculus devices, and, you know, there's a lot going on there. I think the Oculus Quest, for many people, is that, you know, completely free wireless headset that we've been waiting for, and it's also a lot more powerful than last year's Oculus Go, which was also self-contained and fully wireless. You know, that one was basically an entertainment headset. You could watch a lot of movies, play some basic games, and it had a little motion controllers. But the Quest has two motion controllers, and in fact, the same ones that are going to be on the Rift S. And it supports 6 degrees of freedom tracking. That means it could track your head and your hand movement in every direction. And it has its sensors built in, so you don't have to set up anything in your house, which has been kind of a problem for PC VR since the beginning. It's $400, and it's certainly the simplest way to get a really compelling VR experience. You know, this is something much more than the Oculus Go. It's much more powerful. It can play games like Superhot and Thumper and, you know, things that look almost as good as PC VR and almost as good as the PS VR. And also give you those great motion controllers. And I think that aspect of it is really compelling. If anything, I think the Quest is going to be a great entry point of VR for many people. It's something, you know, especially the early adopters, you can take around, you can show to your friends and have them try it out. And I think that's really the key. The thing I've noticed with VR, having covered it, you know, since before the Rift launch in 2016, is that just writing about it, just talking about it, it is kind of super boring. I've noticed people just, their eyes glaze over if they're not already into this tech or excited by it. They really need to experience it to get the sense of it. And I think that's what the Quest will certainly allow. I think in the end, I came away mostly impressed by the Quest, just because of that portability and that ease of use. Over time, though, I did notice that, you know, things just didn't look as good as I liked on my Oculus Rift, which I've been playing for a couple of years, or even the HTC Vive. Like, you know, PC VR, they have the advantage of full-scale computer graphics cards, very powerful CPUs. You know, there's a lot of power behind PC VR. And even though you're tethered to PC in those cases, I think for me, I think maybe that trade-off is kind of worth it. Basically, I won't be getting rid of any of my PC VR headsets just because the Quest exists, but I'm still glad that it does exist because it really just opens that door quite a bit. I have to say, I'm surprised that the motion tracking is as good as it is. I was a little worried about that. And I think Oculus is doing a good job of getting the content out there. I think there are something like 50 games coming for the launch of this thing. Some really popular games too, like Moss, which debuted on the PS VR. And eventually hit the PC headsets, that's coming to the Quest as well. So that's really it. And I think that was the key to the PlayStation VR. It was inexpensive, relatively, as long as you had a PlayStation, and the library content was really good. I just never really liked the setup of the PlayStation VR. That was always a pain. You know, that's something the Quest doesn't have at all. You kind of just put it on. You trace a boundary around where you're standing, so you don't bump into any walls. Or if you just choose to sit or stand in place, it'll just automatically place a small boundary around you. And I think that's all pretty good. Like, that's pretty much all you need to do to get started. Software-wise, Oculus has also made a few improvements, I think thanks to that new sensor system. The Guardian system, which is what Oculus calls those blue walls that you set up for the boundaries, you can now actually peer through them. And when you do, you see a black and white version of your room that's called pass-through. And that's pretty cool. That's a way to let you at least see if there's a glass of water or something on your table, or if you're looking for your phone or something, or if you're just trying to, you know, talk to somebody in the room. You can actually get a sense of the world without taking off your headset. The Windows headsets have done that by letting you just flip up the visor physically, but I think this is a good solution, and it's pretty seamless, too, so I was pretty impressed by that. Overall, at Engadget, I gave the Quest an 85 out of 100, which is that's a decent score. It's not a absolute recommendation. There are certainly caveats I have about it. It is a little heavy. It's about 20% heavier than the Rift, I believe. And I really feel that on my nose and kind of around my eyes. And no matter what I did with the head strap to kind of adjust that, it never quite felt comfortable. And that was kind of a pain. But it's definitely a good evolution of wireless self-contained VR. We also saw the Vive Focus last year, I believe. And, you know, that kind of does the same thing. In the end, all of these things are going to be limited by their mobile processors. But it's getting better. And I think that's pretty impressive. The Rift S, on the other hand, is kind of a weird follow-up to the Rift. And you can really tell that all their focus is on the Quest right now. That is their vision of VR, is to be, you know, self-contained, easy to use, which is fine. But, you know, I think especially for the early adopters and the people who were supporting this all from the beginning, they kind of deserve something a little more than a slightly tweaked, slightly higher resolution version of a PC VR headset. So let me talk a little bit about why I'm disappointed here. There is a higher resolution screen, but now the Rift S is using fast switching LCDs instead of OLED, which means you're not going to get those inky black levels as before. Oculus told me those LCDs have better subpixel rendering, which basically means you'll see more. It'll appear as it has even a higher resolution than what the numbers tell you. And it certainly does look clear, better than the Rift. Strangely, though, the Quest has an actually higher effective resolution and OLED screens, so it's really kind of funny to see these technology changes switch up. I guess after so long, I just wanted something more of an improvement. There was a TechCrunch report that claimed that Oculus canceled a full-on Rift sequel, and that prompted the Oculus co-founder to leave the company, Brendan Nerib. So, you know, that's pretty telling. If somebody who was so devoted to this technology kind of just gave up hope and left, it's probably not a good sign. Oculus also teamed up with Lenovo to build the Rift S, and I think you can really tell. It just feels a little cheaper, a little less well-designed than the Rift. It looks pretty bland and boring. It looks like just another mixed reality headset, honestly, like something from the Windows camp. And there's just nothing really distinctive about it. It also just feels super cheap, and that's not great. It feels like something that's going to start to fall apart pretty quickly. One recommendation I mentioned is if you're into PC VR, if you have a laptop or a desktop that supports it, you might be able to get a good deal on an Oculus Rift, the original one, with the motion controllers. Right now, it's selling for around $400, but I saw them at closer to $300 over the holidays. And now that the Rift S is out, I can imagine that is going to get even cheaper as companies try to clear out their stock. It's worth mentioning another big advantage of the Rift S. It does have built-in sensors just like the Quest, so you don't have to go set those up on your table. The Oculus Rift required 2 tabletop sensors just to work. And if you wanted room-scale tracking for slightly bigger games, things like shooters where you may be turning around and using the controllers, you need to buy an extra sensor and put it behind you and somehow connect that to your PC. So the Rift S doesn't have any of that. That's kind of nice, at least. What's kind of funny is that basically an hour before the Oculus Rift embargo was about to hit, Valve finally dropped the news about their Index VR headset, and this is their super high-end setup. It's basically kind of a sequel to the HTC Vive because it's also going to be powered by Steam VR. The whole kit is going to be $1,000, and that gets you a very high-resolution headset with 120 and 144 hertz refresh rates. That's something we're typically seeing in gaming PCs these days because it makes your games just look incredibly smooth on high refresh rate monitors. To have that built right into a headset that's so close to your eyes, I think that's going to be kind of crazy and make it all seem more realistic. It's also going to run on Valve's Knuckle controllers that we've been waiting to see for so long. This is basically their competitor to Oculus's motion controllers, and what's cool is that they can detect where your fingers are. I think there's better hand tracking. The only downside is that it is relying on external sensors, not built-in sensors, so you'll need to set those up around your room, and that also adds to the whole cost of the whole thing. But it seems like Valve is going for super high-end VR. They want to be like the next step. And honestly, this is probably what the Oculus Rift 2 was going to be. Something like this, something very, very high resolution that maybe costs much more than $400. I think there's definitely room for both high-end and slightly cheaper consumer VR. And it's at least nice to see that there's more competition heating up on both sides. Now let's get to a couple questions around VR. I've asked around on Twitter. Austin Thuggleston sent me this one. He asks, if you had a friend who's curious about VR, would you suggest PSVR or the Quest? And this is actually, it's an interesting question in terms of something for them to buy. Honestly, I think the Oculus Quest is a better buy. It's $400. It's entirely self-contained. There's a strong selection of games. There's no sensors to set up. Like, there's, you know, it just has so much going for it. The PSVR, though, has a strong library of games, and if they already have a PlayStation 4, I've seen it get really cheap under bundles. It's going for like $250 with games, and even less in some cases over the holidays. The big downside with the PSVR is that it's just not a super high resolution thing. It's using very old technology. It's using, you know, Sony's camera and their motion controllers from a long time ago. It's a very basic intro to VR. I think you'd get a much better experience with the Oculus Quest. And Jeff Engelstein writes, I have a Rift Consumer Version 1, that's the original Oculus Rift. Is it worth upgrading to an S? I don't really think so, just because it's another $400 you're going to be laying out. It depends on how much you hate those sensors. And I think anybody who's a dedicated Oculus fan at this point has learned to live with them, has learned to figure out ways not to bump into them and to set them up quickly. You've probably invested in another sensor to get some semi-room scale tracking going on. So, you know, for many reasons, I don't think it's worth an upgrade. Save your money. And if you want a true upgrade, maybe that's the Valve Index you should be looking at. Next up is Lyle Lopez, who has a couple questions. First is around VR, and he says, VR had a phenomenal 2018, and I was very close to buying the Black Friday 2018 PSVR bundle with Astrobot, but decided not to at the last second. What is my projection for VR in 2019? Specifically, is there an updated PSVR unit on the near horizon that's worth waiting for? What are your thoughts on Labo VR? Jeff was quite down on DLC. That's Jeff Cannata, my co-host on the Slash Filmcast. His equipment, he has a PlayStation 4, not Pro, and a Nintendo Switch. He doesn't have a PC or an Xbox, though he's eyeing an Xbox One X as a potential 4K Blu-ray player, and that goes to his next question. But first, let me tackle this. And I'll say, based on what we've seen so far, this week alone has been really exciting for VR. We've got better wireless, we've got a better Oculus, slightly better Oculus PC VR headset, and we're hearing about what Valve is working on. It's very exciting. I think basically this is the year where we're going to start to see some major hardware changes. I've been hearing about and seeing demos of eye tracking for some time, and companies like Tobii have been offering this. It's really cool. It's almost like having a sixth sense in VR, because then your VR characters can start to make eye contact with you, or you could start to, like, if you had a magic spell or something, you could control it by the movement of your eyes. It's like a superpower. It's really weird. Better haptics, all these things I'm expecting to see. When it comes to another PSVR, it definitely sounds like Sony doesn't have one lined up this year. That's something I'd bet is going to be coming after whatever the next console is going to be, the one we're expecting next year. I believe in that Wired article where Mark Cerny goes into the specs that he's planning for the next PlayStation, it sounds like they're committed to the PlayStation VR as it is right now. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be backwards compatible. So there's that. And it sounds like they're leaving room for something else down the line. I wouldn't wait for a successor to the PSVR right away, though. As for Labo VR, I played around with it during a Nintendo hands-on event, and I wrote that up in Engadget. I think it's really cool. Like, it works. It's insane that this works at all. It's a very basic type of VR, but the cool part of it is that it's Labo. So you're going to be building this little headset, hopefully with your kids or, you know, younger family members. And it's something, it doesn't have head straps or anything. You're just holding it up to your eyes. There's a game where you're just going underwater and taking photos of sea creatures. There's a game where you're flying on the back of a bird. It's a combination of both very simplistic VR, but also really cool feedback from all these Labo controllers. So, you know, I think it's fun. I think kids will really enjoy it. I didn't hear Jeff's complaints, but if he's comparing it to PC VR or something, or even like the Oculus Go or the Quest, it's certainly not going to compare to that. But that's a longer discussion. I think it's hitting a very different market. This is basically sort of like baby's first VR. And in that respect, it's pretty cool. And also, you can get the initial kit for just $40 if you have a Switch. That's not a huge investment. I think you can do a lot with that, and it'll certainly entertain kids for a very long time. Okay, on to Lyle's next question. He says, I spent a better part of the last decade building a Blu-ray collection and replacing all my favorite shows and DVDs and VHS tapes with Blu-rays. So did I, by the way. So I hear you, Lyle. I do not think I'll be replacing my Blu-ray library with 4K versions due to the cost. However, I've started buying 4K Blu-rays of new releases like Mission Impossible Fallout, Blade Runner 2049, and Dunkirk. Thankfully, all these come with Blu-ray copies I can use in my Blu-ray player, as well as a 4K digital copy that I can stream with Vudu on my TV. He's wondering, should he eventually get a 4K Blu-ray player? I will say, as long as you're buying those discs, you should get one eventually, and probably the Xbox One X if you don't have an Xbox right now. I've seen that thing go on sale pretty often, and that's what I use as a 4K Blu-ray player. It works decently. I've never really liked using Xboxes for that, but if you have a universal remote or one of those Xbox remotes, it makes life a little easier because controlling things with the GameCAD is not great. But it works fine. I think the main thing for me as a cinephile is that I'm just astounded that I can have this disc that has a truly 4K version of a movie with HDR and great, you know, surround sound like Atmos. In many cases, what you're looking at is going to be a higher resolution than what some cinemas are showing, especially ones that don't have 4K digital projectors. And that's astounding to me. So I buy the 4K Blu-rays of movies I love, movies I really enjoy and want to watch again immediately. I'll sometimes just buy it 4K on iTunes. I certainly love the fact that when you redeem a digital copy on iTunes, you get the 4K too. So that all kind of works out. And, you know, it's nice to have a library of movies. It's quite often when my internet conks out or iTunes or Netflix or something has issues, I don't want to be left with nothing to watch. It is very nice having physical media in those cases. And finally, I got a couple questions about wireless headphones. And this is always a hot topic, certainly as more phones are losing the headphone jack. So go back to some of the earlier episodes for previous recommendations. But Ash is asking, can I recommend a set of wireless earbuds as the iPhones don't come with them? I've said this quite a bit. I'm a really big fan of the Beats X, which is their around-the-neck wireless buds. I like that cable. I like having a thin cable, something to connect it to me. Some people really like the AirPods. I'm not a huge fan. The AirPods 2 are out now, though, so maybe worth just trying them out. Personally, I've been using the Jaybird Run XT, which is their new completely wireless earbuds, and I like those because they have a hook that kind of centers them into my ear canal a little, so I can move around and I can lean forward and run around, and they don't move at all. Whereas the AirPods and other things like the Anker Liberty Air, which are basically AirPods cheap competitors, they always fall out. I can never be secure with them. And that doesn't seem like a great thing when you're wearing, you know, $100, $200 headphones. And Elvis from NYC asks, should I make the switch over to Bluetooth headphones? I currently have the ATH M50X headphones and a pair of inexpensive Skullcandy earbuds. With a lot of mobile phone manufacturers deciding to drop the headphone jack in favor of Bluetooth, it seems like it's time to invest in new headphones. His main concern is audio quality, it seems. He says, most of my music is high bitrate MP3s or lossless audio. I haven't had the best relationship with Bluetooth audio over the years across multiple devices. I've noticed things like audio drop in quality and experienced connectivity issues when the devices are a few feet apart from each other. This includes my current car stereo receiver, a BT adapter for my old car stereo, my earbuds, and various Bluetooth devices I've streamed to. Is this an issue with the physical hardware or an issue with Bluetooth itself? Currently, I would rather purchase a Bluetooth adapter for my AT headphones rather than purchase a new pair. I briefly tried my girlfriend's Sony WH-1000XM3 headphones, but still wasn't 100% convinced. Now I'm wondering, am I so out of touch, or is it the manufacturers that are wrong? Thank you. Personally, I've talked about this quite a bit, Elvis. I do think the headphone jack is a glorious thing. It is dumb for smartphone makers to dump it, especially as these phones are getting bigger and bigger screens that can have more internal room to fit them in. All hail the headphone jack. Let's bring it back. But at the same time, it's certainly worth getting a nice pair of wireless headphones. During flights, they're some of the best things you could have. Honestly, the noise-canceling headphones have changed my life, and certainly wireless ones are better than any of the others. I'll say spend a little more time with those Sony 1000XM3s. Those are currently my favorite wireless headphones. They sound fantastic. The noise canceling is super strong, even better than Bose's. And, you know, all around, it's just like a great complete package. If you're used to great lined headphones, I don't think you have to get rid of those. And certainly if you want to use those ATHs on something like an iPhone, you can always just use the adapter. There's just a certain convenience that comes to wireless. I like being able to just walk around, you know, New York City and be on the subway or something without worrying about cables and getting anything tangled. There's a freedom to wireless headphones that I think is super compelling. If you're outside in a noisy environment, you know, having a pristine wired experience, you're actually already losing out on that because you have all this other external noise. In many cases, it'll sound better if you have a good pair of wireless noise-canceling headphones that actually cuts down on all that exterior crap. Alright, and I think that'll do it for this episode of No More Tech. As always, please send me your questions. Go to nomoretech.net/ask or shoot me an email at nomoretechpodcast@gmail.com. And honestly, you can just ping me on Twitter too. I'm @Devendra there. I write about tech and gadgets. I podcast at slashfilm.com. Check out the /filmcast. Our music comes from Mallory Johns, aka Malix, on SoundCloud. Check out her stuff. And as always, send me your questions because I want to answer them.